Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And Ben is off this week, but in his stead we have two great guests. Because some would argue that Ben takes the place of two people, but I wouldn't.
One for him, one for his beard, you know.
So we're joined this week with the creative team behind Boy Zero. I almost said Zero Boy.
No, you're good.
Okay. And that is Charles A. Chester and Shiloh Penfield. How are you guys doing?
Good. Great.
Very good. Happy to be here, guys.
Cool. So as we always kind of start these interviews out with, I guess the first question I'll start with Charles. How did you get started with this book? Where did the idea come from? And is it something have you always wanted to write a comic?
I'll go broad. When I was in film school years ago, and while I was in film school, it was a film school on Long Island. Don't hold that against me, please. The problem is that Long Island is essentially, it's a rich, a lot of money passing through there. So there's a lot of trust fund kids going through. So I was watching a lot of my classmates make these amazing short films. I'm like, how are you doing this? Where is this money coming from? And lo and behold, you know, mom and dad, you know, funded a lot of their projects. Right. So I ended up being the script writing guy in the department. Because it didn't cost me anything. I mean, we didn't come from any money, my family. So, like, I had to be creative the best way that I could find my outlet, if you will. So I ended up just out of necessity, just to hold my own there, became the go-to script writing guy. As this, you know, went on, I realized that, you know, I wanted to see my visions come to life, you know. And I realized that it was not going to happen. No one was going to give me millions of dollars to make a film. It's just not realistic. I mean, you can't just be talented. You also have to hit the lottery in a way, you know, to get a film made. So I hit the ground running with comic books, mainly because I could tell a story. I had no restrictions. There was no budget. You know, I didn't have to worry about a budget for a building exploding, you know, that I would have to worry about in a film. We could do that on the page. You know, I could tell the story that I wanted to tell it, and with no restrictions, with no caveats. I went in, sky's the limit when, you know, in comic books. And I thought that was a beautiful thing. So when I found Shiloh years ago, I don't want to admit how many years ago that you know, I came to her with this idea that Shiloh, tell me if I'm wrong here. I think the initial script for it was maybe 60 pages.
Yeah, it was significantly shorter than it turned out to be.
Poor Shiloh had no idea what she was in for.
Okay, wait, hold on. Wait, it was 60 pages, and you're saying that's shorter than what it is now?
Yes, the comic book script page now would clock in at probably about 220 pages. Something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it grew quite a bit. I learned something early on when Shiloh and I first got started. Like, she was inspiring me. Her work was inspiring me. And then I was doing a lot of reading and, you know, research at that time. I was getting my master's. And it grew into something more. Basically, I did a rewrite. Shiloh and I had a number of pages done. And I went to her. I'm like, listen, let's put this on hold for a moment. I need... These arcs are not working. These story arcs need to be flushed out. These characters are not jumping off the page for me. I'm failing here. I need to rethink this thing. And the only way to do it for me was to, you know, strap in and say, we got to make this thing bigger. We got to give these characters a chance to breathe, to take us on this journey. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be a story about characters and less just about the plot. You know, I wanted the characters to drive it, not the plot to drive it.
Right, right.
you know. But initial inspiration came from I was doing some research for another project, and I stumbled across this article. And the article was about an area in Louisiana called Cancer Alley. And I still have the article somewhere. And the picture, photographer did this amazing pictorial layout where in the foreground you see nothing but headstones. Just, it's a cemetery, and the cemetery's falling to pieces. And just beyond, on the horizon, are these huge smokestacks just emitting plumes of pollution and garbage into the air.
Oh, nice.
And the whole idea is that, you know, this town got destroyed by industry.
Right.
And almost everyone in the town was suffering from some form of cancer. And that idea spawned what took Shiloh an eye on almost a decade adventure.
Cool. You know, it's funny that it's actually a story since we started doing this podcast. Not the story from your book, your story. We hear from a lot of creative people that, you know, because there is a whole different world between movies and comic book writing, but at the same time, they're both visual mediums for telling stories. So it is a natural transition to go from, like, you know, I want to make movies, but I can't really do it, so I'm going to write comic books. Cool. So, Shiloh, tell us about you. How did you get into art? Like, were you drawing from the time you were born? You know, have you always been interested in comics?
I mean, yeah, I've been drawing since I was a little kid, and my cousin's also a cartoonist, so they're always, like, artists in the family, and my dad collects comics, so, you know, it was something that I always wanted to do as a kid, and then finally was like, I guess I'll just do it, and I responded to Charlie's ad back when Craigslist wasn't creepy.
When was that?
That was a long time ago.
And what was about it? What was about the story that drew you in?
I mean, the first draft, it almost kind of reminded me of, like, the Stephen King's It with all the children and the sort of jumping back and forth in time. And, you know, I'm a really big Stephen King fan. And so I thought it was a really interesting concept.
Nice.
Cool. So who are some of your inspirations that you draw from for your art?
I mean, I guess every artist loves H.J. Williams right now. And would aspire to be him. But I love Jeff Lemire. And, like, as a kid, I liked Wendy Pianotti and, you know, Jill Thompson and a lot of the old sort of Vertigo comics.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. A lot of the artwork in the Vertigo is more, probably not the right term, like avant-garde or whatever. It wasn't a whole lot of straight lines. You know, with, like, Hellblazer and Dream and, you know, all the stuff. It's a nice art form, though.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole thing with Vertigo. I'm sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. Is that it is more of an adult geared audience. So they're not afraid to be more artistic with it, you know?
Yeah. And doing much more creative things just with the panel breakdowns rather than the sort of straightforward.
Right. Yeah, straightforward, 6 panels per page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do not abide by that at all.
I know. I'm good when it's below, like, 9 panels. I'm like, thank God.
There might have been, like, 1 page or, like, okay, we're going 15 panels. Just like, no.
So, Charles, obviously you went the creep route and put an ad out on Craigslist.
Yeah.
What was it about Shiloh that made you decide that she was the artist you wanted to work with?
Well, Shiloh has an amazing eye for, I found, capturing, like, innocence in youth. And I wasn't finding that in a lot of the artists that I was looking at that time. So basically, the way it went back then was, you know, I had never attempted anything like this before. So for me, I knew even at 60 pages, it was going to be a long haul that we were in for. Now, I didn't know it was going to be an epic long haul. I thought it was just going to be a long haul. So I knew I had to work with somebody that just saw the world like me, you know, that just got it, that didn't need to be over-directed, that the words on the page of what I, you know, was saying was enough and the vision would be intact. So at the time, I put the ad out, you know, maybe like 60 replies, maybe even a little bit more. I narrowed it down to like 3 or 4 people. And at that point, I gave one script page out and it was film script. It wasn't even graphic novel script. Yes, I've learned how to do graphic novel script begrudgingly since then. I gave Shiloh a page and these other two people pages, and with no direction but what was in front of them, and Shiloh knocked it out of the park. Like she jumped inside my head, you know, with the one, I still have the one page. I think we included that first page that she did as a mock-up and in the supplemental materials at the end of one of the books. I mean, Boy Zero is broken up into 2 volumes, volume 1, volume 2. So I believe it's at the end of volume 1, we include that sample. But then she's also was offering something that I didn't even realize how powerful watercolors can be. And especially in a horror book, which at that point, like I was like, I didn't even think to go that route. And the sample she sent me just amplified the creepiness. It's almost like the bleeding of the watercolors on the page was like a statement in this universe in and of itself, you know?
Oh, cool. Yeah. And, then Shyla, I have to ask you, is that just the medium you choose to work in normally, or was that a decision you made based on what you read?
A little bit of both. I mean, if I can convince people to use like traditional watercolor paints, I'll go that route. But I think it also helped just express a lot of the moodiness of the scene.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Just because, I mean, I prefer doing the more classic pen and ink page with my light box and then painting it out afterwards. I know everybody prefers digital now, but
not everybody. I mean, there's something to be said about, and you can still tell the difference between digital and done by hand most of the time, unless they're really, really good.
Mm. Yeah, you can still tell.
That says something though, right? I mean, you know, you can tell real art from somebody's, I mean, not that digital isn't real art. Oh my God. I just open this up.
There's
definitely people. There's definitely amazing digital artists, but
oh yes,
it's just my preferred way to work.
Right. Right. No, definitely. And I definitely think there's something to that. Being able to use your own voice in the book, you know, if that's the medium you're comfortable creating through, that comes through in the book that you're working on, because people can see that there's more passion in it, you know. I think that's one of the reasons a lot of times I'm drawn to independent books, because I can tell that it's not somebody who was just hired to draw Batman, it was somebody who created a character that they cared about, you know.
Well, that's the nice thing about a lot of the different independent books, is you don't have to conform to the sort of house style that maybe somebody like Marvel or DC has.
Right, right. So you guys are talking about, you know, volume 1, volume 2. So I'm a little confused. Is Boy Zero currently available?
Yeah, Boy Zero was published by Caliber Comics. Gary Reed, great guy. He took a gamble on us and put it out there, and I couldn't be happier. It had a run chapter by chapter, so what is it, 7 chapters, came out in digital, you know, one by one, over a course of several months, and then it got all collected, some more materials were added to it, and it was broken up into volume 1 and volume 2, which are available in print through Amazon.com and Caliber.com, and as of right now, we are presenting it to Diamond Publishing, who would be responsible to distribute it to brick and mortar. So fingers crossed, they want it. We'll see.
Mm. And I found them on Amazon. Right? The two volumes together are $39.99.
Well worth the money.
Yeah. Well, the cover art is quite, it's kind of brilliant. I like how there's the one cover with the red, and it's, you've got, I guess the loudspeaker on top of a pole and a bunch of people looking up at it. Mm-hmm. And you've got the red coming from the right hand side. And, I guess according to the storyline, like the guy who's killing people is talking through the loudspeaker, right?
Yeah. They, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the old black and white film M, about the serial killer who would whistle. He was going through, I was like London maybe. But he was whistling this specific tune. I want to say it was, some sort of a classical piece. And he would constantly whistle it as he was about to kill somebody. And when I was younger and I'd seen the film, I'm like, that is horrifying. You know what I mean? That, like, to be connected by, like, this single, like, melody. So the idea in Glass City, the metropolis that we created, is that there's a serial killer killing people, and he is damn good at it because no one can figure out where it's coming from, what's happening. But he, as he's about to kill somebody, all the speakers in the entire city, every duckbill speaker, every radio, anything that it can be broadcast into, plays this old slave song from like early American slave song. And in that moment, the entire city is united in fear, knowing that one of their own is being butchered somewhere. So he cripples the city in fear by doing this.
Uh-huh. So that's like a Pavlovian thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Like once the whole idea is that, like, once you hear the crackle of those speakers, everyone's gut just drops and they look up at those speakers in just horror, knowing that it's possibly one of their loved ones that's getting killed in that moment.
And the thing about the cover is that the speaker is on the side, on the left-hand side, where it's darker and everything's in blue, mm-hmm. except for the speaker itself, which is in red, which is, you know, that's where the tune of the murder is coming out, I guess. And it's, well, I think it's symbolic, but I'm probably reading too much into it. But, you know, it's, I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, Charlotte does a great idea of always drawing your eye where we need it to be drawn, you know. If you notice, the second book, here's a little Easter egg for anybody who's reading these. It's the same building as the building shown in Volume 1. So in between the gap of those books, it's implied something horrific has happened in Glass City, because on the cover of Book 2, that building is destroyed. And now there's graffiti on the building. And everyone's praying to this symbol on the building, this symbol of someone screaming as if there's a new god in town. Something horrible has happened since this serial killer.
Neat.
So I wanted to make sure that there's Easter eggs all over the place in this book. If we spent a lot of time on this book trying to make sure that every time you read it, you're going to find something new.
Cool. So So you're working on the deal with Diamond, and then after that, is there a plan for a volume 3? Maybe one where we find out the main character was actually working for Hydra all along.
Oh, you said you were going to work that in. I didn't realize you were going to do it there. That was good.
Oh my God! No, we're as far from the Marvel universe as can be at this point.
Oh, okay. All right.
But yeah, I if you don't mind, can I just do like a quick little synopsis of what the story is about? Because
absolutely. Yeah, please.
What the hell are they talking about?
Yeah. Oh wait, but first, spoilers. Okay, go ahead.
So basic idea here is that I wanted to do something that paid homage to the events, I'll call them, when I was a child. And the events for me were the Stephen King miniseries that would come on in the 90s. And they would span 4 nights. And it would just be like a bunch of mini movies all connected together. You had It. You had Langoliers, Tommyknockers. Eventually, I think they did one for Salem's Lot and The Shining. For me, this was church. You know, I would just sit down. And it was the greatest thing in the world to me. From a poor family that couldn't afford cable, these were broadcast on regular channels, you know? So it was a huge event. So I wanted to do a story that paid homage to that. And this is very much in the vein of the Stephen King miniseries, I'll say. So the basic idea is there's this metropolis we create called Glass City. Glass City is named because there is a building in the center. Shallow's design on this is gorgeous, where basically imagine this huge building with these two statues at the top, and in their hands are these big orbs of light. And the city has the ability to change the color of the light in these statues' hands. The whole city is outfitted with glass panels that reflect. So when they change the color of these orbs of light, the whole city will reflect that color and essentially glow in that color from a distance. So God forbid there's a terrorist warning. They throw in a certain color and the city knows it's on lockdown. You know, they use it as a communication tool in a way. So in Glass City, there's this serial killer named the Throne of God, and he's just, you know, got this city crippled in fear. So the city at night is a certain color, and they refuse to take it out of this certain color until this is resolved. So our main detective, who's got the worst case to be put on because everyone's looking at him at this point, finally gets a lead, chases it down, and in that moment, they're about to catch the throne. He's mumbling to himself in this apartment building, saying that somebody else was here. Somebody else was in the room with me. He's ruined my life work. And then he passes out. Now, Detective Drecker notices that in the Thrones of God's eyes, there was something that just didn't sit right, and he'd seen it before. So Throne of God, something happens to the Throne of God. I'm not going to spoil that. But the detective essentially wants to travel back into the past, not time travel, but like, you know, reminisce and try to, you know, figure out. There was his first case ever. I think it was like 13 years to 15 years prior to this, was in a small town outside of Glass City, and a bunch of children were getting killed. And he thought he solved it, but now he's doubting that they figured it out. And the hub of this story takes place in this small town. And there's a secret that they missed that essentially could destroy all of Glass City if they don't figure it out. So Detective Drecker is trying to figure out what he screwed up in the past in order to fix it. Now, the basic pitch, if I was going to say anything about the story, it's really with these kids that getting killed in the small town. You fall in love with these kids. You don't want them to get killed. There's a great cast of these little kids, like in It, that you follow, and their friends are getting killed, and you feel for them, especially since, like, it's unexplained. You don't understand what's happening. They believe the boogeyman came to their small town to kill them, and they start to band together and start to, like, almost, like, go on a monster hunt to figure out what it is that's happening in this town. And unbeknownst to them, maybe they're right. Maybe there was something lurking in the darkness, and it could be something supernatural that kind of pieces everything together. So I would say, if you're going to read this, expect a big Shyamalan twist at the end to tie it all together.
One of his good ones, right? Not like The Village is in the end of the current time.
Right? Wait. So the detective was dead the whole time? Is that?
Oh, crap. 10 years of work down the drain. No. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big Shyamalan fan. I feel like he's a sleeping giant. Like, something, he's got something in there still. But yeah, like old school Shyamalan. I can't believe I'm saying old school Shyamalan. But you know what I mean. The whole twist of this book. I'm hoping no one guesses it. No one's guessed it yet. You know what happens. So I'm hoping that draws people in.
So, here's a question. You write a story where, there's a lot of focus on children, and then there's children who are obviously dying in the book. Do you ever get any kind of backlash from, fans or groups, about that kind of thing?
I haven't as of yet. I feel like we do it tastefully. We're not butchering children for the sake of butchering children. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's supposed to be you know, back in the 80s, we had some great movies where, like, they took the time to build these characters up for children, like, and they became my friends. You know, the characters on the screen were as much my friends as the kids on the block I grew up with. You know, like Atreyu mm-hmm. from Neverending Story. I swear to God, like, I know that guy better than I know half mm-hmm. of my friends, you know, like, because I've watched that movie so many times, because they jump off the screen. I feel like if you create characters that are rich and not there just to get killed, you know, that actually have depth and emotions and you feel for them, then I don't see why people would come after you. You know, like, so I'm not going to say that, you know, it's a little disturbing moments of the book. But I feel like that, you know, ultimately there's truth to it. There's a little bit of reality to it. And
right.
We're just kind of tapping into those fears that we all fear, you know, like my nephew getting hurt, or, you know, my friend's kid, you know, disappearing, you know, that horror of not being able to protect the ones that we love most is just primordial, you know?
Right. No. And I definitely, I mean, there's a, you know, we live in an ugly world at times, you know, and there are, atrocities that happen, and it just sometimes when you show those things to people through art, people get angry, and it's like, well, you shouldn't be angry at the art, you should be angry at what it's a reflection of.
Right. No, I agree completely. Listen, I'm open for any discussions. Anyone finds the work offensive in any way, let's open up dialogue about it, you know. I'm very much aware, this being the first book that we've gotten out there, that this is our chance to learn, you know. And I'm not going to say that I'm going to pander to everyone's opinion. You can't. It's impossible. You'd never get anything done, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious. I really am curious about, you know, how people will take to this idea. You know, I wonder what, not comparing myself in any way to Stephen King, but I wonder what kind of letter Stephen King was getting after a book like It, you know?
Right, exactly. Right. That's kind of what I was, you know, alluding to in the first place too, is, or even look at J.K. Rowling and her saying that she wanted to kill Harry Potter off at the end of the series, and she was getting death threats, you know?
Yeah. I think it's incredible what a young adult fan base, how intense they get, you know. It's
right.
If you could tap into that, you can change people's views. You know, if you tell a good story to the youth, you can really make an impact. I know that the stories that I grew up in just to this day, like, still shape me as a writer and artist all around.
Right. Right. Now, and actually, I'm one of the people, I mean, I might upset someone with what I'm about to say.
Usually that means me, but go ahead.
No. This is to the listeners. But I'm from the other camp. I think she should have killed Harry Potter. Hold on. Because she originally had an artistic vision. Mm-hmm. And she walked away from her artistic vision because of fear of upsetting fans. But at the end, isn't the story of Harry Potter, in a way, a story of sacrifice?
Yeah.
You know, he gave up a lot because he was the chosen one that had to go after Voldemort. So the ultimate sacrifice at the end, he gave up his life to stop this person so everyone else could live. To me, it was a much better ending and a much better story to tell, a much better moral, but...
But a little bit dark for a YA, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's dangerous, I think, to allow the audience to completely dictate, you know, where it goes, because at that point you don't get to tell the stories that you know might rattle us, you know. And sometimes we need those sort of stories. I'm not saying we should have killed Harry Potter, but I'm just saying, like, it's sad to think that maybe she didn't get to tell the story that she needed to tell. You know.
All right. If anyone agrees with me, tweet at us hashtag Potter Corpse. All right. I just, you know.
Oh.
No, I definitely agree. I think it would definitely have been a better ending to it. He didn't need to go on and live. It ruins it.
Oh, and those young actors in the old makeup at the end was just a slap in the face. I was like, come on, guys, this is too much.
Sometimes
it's kind of funny after they did Robert Downey Jr. younger so well they couldn't, you know.
I feel like that was her slap in the face to the fans. Like, okay, you wanted them to live. Now, here they are as old people.
Her slap in the face of the fans was that she came out saying that she wanted Hermione to wind up with Harry and not Ron. So.
Scandalous.
Yeah.
It's funny though, because you actually brought up an excellent point about not giving in to fans, and obviously comic books is a genre where that happens a lot. They step outside of their characters' norms, they change something, fans get upset, so 6 months later they just revert it back to what it was originally to keep fans quote unquote happy.
Also known as the DC.
Right. What is this new one called? Birth?
Rebirth.
Rebirth. Yeah.
I'm ashamed to say that I have it in a comic book bag on the counter in the other room right now. Did pick it up. I'm a little curious because apparently they want to apologize for what they've done in the cinematic universe in some way. I've read a couple of interviews, so I'm curious to see, you know, what happens with this. But yeah, I just, if you go down the rabbit hole of trying to appease everybody, you're not going to end up coming with Vision, a vision of like a true vision for a story, you know, or a story arc or a large story arc. So, not to say that, you know, I'm arrogant and I wouldn't take advice. I mean, like, I'm all about that. Absolutely. I just, it saddens me to see, someone change an ending completely because, the powers that be, you know. I think you guys talked about this in the last interview you did about, how in Civil War, the ending was compromised, the comic book.
Oh, right.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. No, actually, I met Mark Miller, a long time ago in Galaxy Far, Far Away. And I had always had this feeling that that's how he wanted to end the story, was to kill Steve Rogers off. Mm-hmm. So that was the question I asked him. And, you know, he's like, yeah, that is how I wanted to end the story. But Marvel said no, they had a plan to kill him, you know, in Captain America, whatever number that was, where they actually killed him. So he wasn't allowed to end the story that way. So the story suffers. Because it was the original ending of the comic. I will say this, even though I love the story, kind of feels like the Martha ending of the fight in Dawn of Justice.
Oh my God. Don't get me riled up.
They just look around and go, oh, this is wrong. We're causing too much destruction. Let's just stop fighting. Like, what?
Oh my God. Yeah. The idea, this is the only thing I'll say about this. The title alone, Batman v, right? Superman, colon, A Dawn of Justice. So the whole title tells you the entire story of what's going to happen. Like, you're going to have, at least in the first act or so, there's going to be Batman versus Superman, colon being the solution. Something's going to change their fight. And then the end of the film is A Dawn of Justice, where they come together, right? It's all in the title. So what is the colon? In this movie, the colon is Martha. That's what brings them all together. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. Like, this is, you're going to base an entire movie franchise off of this idea. Like, what was that meeting like when they were sitting around, you know, trying to piece this thing together, you know?
Oh, my God. I love it. The colon is Martha. What? I'm sorry.
No, I was just asking Shiloh what she thought.
I thought it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So I thought it was actually going to be much worse. So what I thought, I'm like, it's not as bad. I'll go see the Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah, she was pretty badass in the movie, I will say.
Yeah, that looks like the only light at the end of the tunnel for that series. Because I think that was the only part where you were actually, the music actually finally worked. Not that I'm giving up my hatred of Zimmer, but But yeah, that the music came up and she looked good, and you know, she kicked ass, and it was, you know, pretty good. As long as they handle her character well and make her well-rounded, you know, diplomat / warrior, then at least DC will have done one thing right.
You mean not the eye candy she was to just show up and fight and not actually have any storyline?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Isn't it such a strange phenomenon, like Shiloh was just talking, like it wasn't as bad as she thought it was going to be. Well, the idea of like expectation. When expectations are so low for something, doesn't it? It changes the viewing experience in a way, you know? And when expectations are so high, it also changes the viewing experience. It's almost, it's strange. I don't know if there's a word for it. I'm sure the Germans have a word for it, but we don't have a word for it.
The Germans have words for lots of things.
You know, did anybody watch Preacher?
I have it taped or DVR'd. I haven't watched it yet.
Me too.
I got halfway through it.
I felt mixed, and I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I'm too married to the book that I just can't see past it.
I haven't read the book, so that might be a benefit.
Is that the way you felt when you first saw Smallville?
Well, I think the problem was more that, you know, Garth Ennis had such like a defined voice, whereas like there's been so many interpretations of Batman and Superman from other writers that it's a little easier to let go.
Well, no, I totally agree with that. I think John can agree with this one. I don't know if you guys have ever read Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And they had the short-lived TV show on Sci-Fi.
Oh, and it was kind of bad.
It was kind of really bad. And that's the like a big part of that was he gave up a lot of creative control to the company that made the show, and they changed so much of his character that it just wasn't Dresden anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I totally understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas, I wanted to like it so much, but the idea of something so important to me being helmed by Seth Rogen, just,
you know? I mean, the casting is decent. I don't know.
Yeah. No.
I'll keep watching at least for the first season, I guess.
so far we've gotten Martha is the colon and no to Preacher. All right.
I'll have to check it out anyway.
Yes, I will still watch at least the first episode. It gives us something to watch during the summer break, right? That's the whole point.
that was the point of Agent Carter, but they canceled it.
Oh, well, that's true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing powerful. I haven't been watching anything that's great recently. Everything that I watch is on hold currently.
Did you guys watch the season finale of Flash?
No.
I haven't gotten into Flash yet. I've heard good things, but
Yeah.
Does that much not good? Was that a good noise?
if you forget everything else that the DC has put out, with exception of like season one and half of season three of Arrow, Flash is the best thing that they've done.
I had to stop watching Arrow because I couldn't take watching an oiled up dude shirtless doing pull-ups anymore. I had to stop. I couldn't take it anymore.
Well, that's why I watch. Okay, so you read the comics, I assume.
Of which?
Let's go back to 2011, I think, or 2009, with the Flash Rebirth and then Flashpoint. Flashpoint was the jumping off point for New 52.
Yeah, I'm familiar with those. I honestly, like, the things that I've read that, like, you know, I'm more obsessed with are Alan Moore's work,
Have you been reading Providence?
No, is it good?
Yeah, it's his sort of H.P. Lovecraft offshoot that he was doing.
Right, right.
Oh, wow. Well, those are two things I love, Alan Moore and Lovecraft. So, yeah, I got to check that out. That's awesome. I honestly, like, the DC comic book superhero sort of stuff. Like, I took a break from it for a very long time. I was reading more horror and, you know, one shots than anything else, like Lock and Key and Saga. And then the Swamp Thing, Alan Moore Swamp Thing.
Yes, yes.
I stumbled upon it at, you know, an older age, and I'm like, where has this been my whole life? And I just became obsessed with it. And Sandman, and, you know, the list goes on and on. But that's more the vein that I feel like I'd be reading.
All right. Well, then I won't bore you with the details, but basically...
Everyone should read it? Is that where
you're... No, well, I mean, yeah. Everyone who's watching the show should go back and read those books, because what they set up at the end of season two in The Flash basically... is Flashpoint, which means that when the shows come back next season, and Grant Gustin has already confirmed that on Twitter, like, yes, what you're thinking, mostly of what you're thinking, you can assume is true.
So Supergirl.
That they're going to, yeah, they're going to change all of the shows based on what happened at in the season finale of Flash. So it'll be interesting, but you guys aren't watching those, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll binge it. I'll start watching immediately.
All right, good.
On a side note, is someone's cat freaking out? Is that the noise?
Sorry, that's my cat.
Okay, to make sure.
That's perfectly fine, because usually my dog is the one who's being vocal.
Now, I shut her out of the room so she wouldn't walk on the computer.
No, you've incurred Kitty wrath. She wants to go where she wants to go.
That's what happens when we lock the cat out of our bedroom and she wants in. But then she starts reaching under the door and trying to open it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, her head's like right under the door, just sticking her nose.
That's fantastic.
What else are you guys working on? I mean, is this the big thing, or are there other side projects or anything else?
Well, I can go off on that for a few minutes. Shiloh, do you want to talk about what you might be working on currently now, besides the Charles Chester universe?
Well, I've been doing a couple things for Dead West Comics, which is a friend of mine who just relaunched his own comics publishing. So we've been talking about doing stuff. But I had done a couple of guest spots on his comic Red Knight a while back. So hopefully we'll start putting out more stuff through there as well.
That's very cool. Are you doing that all with like watercolor style? Like what's your approach on that?
It's usually black and white, just to save on printing costs.
Oh yeah.
Very cool. So yeah, the Boy Zero Volume 1, Volume 2 ends launching a bigger story. And that is going to continue on. However, I needed it, and I feel like I can speak on behalf of Shiloh. We both needed a break from this Glass City universe for a little bit. So there's another story that we are currently working on, which is a bit of a beast. It is a 12-part series that is a horror, very much a horror. It's not in the same vein of the murder mystery. Boy Zero, well, that was inspired by Stephen King and Agatha Christie. The one that we're currently working on is more of a throwback to, like, Felucci's Demons movies from the 80s / like 28 Days Later, / George Romero sort of horror story. This one is called Filthy Godless Heathens. bear with me.
wait, is it a book about John and I?
Hey!
I feel like our marketing campaign alone on this, it could be golden, you know?
Oh, okay.
So the basic idea of this one is that there's this small town, which is a Western Revival town. I don't know if you guys are familiar, or maybe anybody who's listening has ever heard of this, but when I grew up in New York, upstate, there's a place called Carson City that fortunately shut down probably about 10 years ago. But Carson City, you would go in, and it's an old Western town, and midday – high noon every day. The sheriff would walk out, clink in his boots, walks down Main Street, and has a gun battle with Black Bart and the bad guys, you know, and then it all ends and everyone, like, you know, thunderous applause, and you walk around to the gift shops and you take a train ride and you can get a sarsaparilla at the saloon. And it was just a blast as a kid. Like, I loved it. So Filthy Godless Heathens takes place in a town called Brimstone, Texas, and it's a Western revival town. And you come in and you get the whole shebang. You know, you're everything that you can imagine. There's like hundreds of actors all dressed apart. You walk around and there's the old jail cell. There's the old saloon. And, you know, there's the sheriff does the show in the middle of the day. So as our story opens up, there's a bowling alley in the town, which is the only modern thing that they have there. And Mort, a local who's very heavy set, bowls a perfect game. He's jumping up and down. He's excited. He falls to the ground. Lo and behold, there's a burial pit, of course, underneath. And he gets scratched by one of these skeletons that looks like a demon. From there, boom, story begins. Days later, a bunch of our characters come into town and it's abandoned. And you come to find that something terrible is happening in Brimstone. And our characters are trying to piece it together and survive the night, essentially. And it's not just any characters. You know, we have an interesting bunch that rolls into town. Among them, the Cirque du Soleil rolls in. And they're there to recruit one of the actors that has gone missing. And so you get a whole bunch of circus folk thrown into this survival piece. So yeah, that's going to keep us busy for a while, but we're almost done with chapter two, and that's going to get released in the near future.
Cool. So real quick, so things are clear for the fans. You said we can get it digitally through Caliber Comics and Amazon. We can buy a hard copy of the graphic novels. Is there any other way to get the hard copy? Do you guys sell it at shows or anything?
Well, through Caliber. You can go to Caliber and pick it up there. But, I'm going to start making myself more present at the con. So I'm going to be going to the Philadelphia con soon, and then I'm scheduling to go to a few more. And I will be peddling my wares at in the near future. So, yeah, keep an eye out for Boy Zero and Filthy Godless Heathens, which will I'll also have in hand when I go to these things.
You going to the Wizard World one or
in Philly? Yeah, the one I believe it's in a week and a half in yep. June, beginning of June. Yeah, I'll be there. You guys going?
Yep.
Sounds like a play date.
Nice.
All right, first round of drinks are on John.
They usually are because they get sloppy after the first one.
That's awesome.
Yes. If you guys will bear with us for a minute, a little bit of podcast business here. Yes. As I mentioned last week to everyone, I just want to make sure I say this again, since Charles brought up the Wizard World Philly. John and I will be there all weekend. John will be walking around. I will be at a table that is labeled Greg Horn Art. Greg won't actually be there, but I will be running his table for him. And if you come up to the table, if you're going to be at Wizard World Philly this weekend at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, and you come up to Greg's table and you say you're a fan of the show, I have something special for you. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm not going to ruin the surprise, but I have something special for our fans who come up to the table.
I can go in many different ways. I'm
curious. Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes. Not sure if it's a threat or not at this point.
Well, why don't you come up to the table next weekend and find out?
All right.
Oh, dear.
And before I forget, before this is no longer news, we did do a quick poll because we mentioned I kind of alluded to this earlier, the Captain America thing. You guys following that in the comics?
I have heard of all this hoopla that's been going on, yeah.
Yeah, so we did a quick poll on our Twitter feed, and we actually got quite a few responses. Basically, the question was, What is your opinion on the Captain America situation? And we gave our listeners four options for this. All right. This is a stupid idea. This is really stupid. It'll eventually go away. Hashtag just ignore. Or I love it. Hashtag Hail Hydra. And of course, the least amount of responses went to Hail Hydra.
Right.
Hold on. I'm waiting for it to actually load.
What are your votes?
Let's see. Yeah, what are your votes?
I feel like I should say Hail Hydra just to upvote it a little.
Oh, okay. All right.
Nice. Yeah, I always like stirring the pot. I'm gonna side with Shiloh on that. Sure.
Okay. All right. So, initially, no one was picking this as a stupid idea. Everyone was just picking this as really stupid. But then I said that to a couple people, so they voted for this is a stupid idea. So 12%, this is a stupid idea. 34%, this is really stupid. 38%, that's the winner. It won't last. Hashtag ignore. And then 16% for I love it, Hail Hydra. And then two more votes. So... That might have jumped it up to 17%. So
can't ignore those analytics. So
I'm loving the poll feature on Twitter. But anyway, so to all our listeners who participated in the poll, thank you. And I agree that this is, you know, like all gimmicks, it won't last. But to go back to our original conversation, it's something new they're trying with Captain America. And us as greedy fans are already like, we don't like it.
Right.
Yep.
There you go.
I don't know. Marvel tends to keep a lot of their gimmicks. It's more DC that's like, forget about it. We didn't do the New 52.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. They tend to reset their entire universe, where Marvel's tried to keep their same continuity for the last 75 years. And it's tough. And when you want to do something different like this, it makes it tough too, because in all honesty, when you look back on the character's history, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm curious, because the twist is revealed at the end of the new comic, Steve Rogers, Captain America number one. I'm curious to see what the explanation is of how, like, is it really he's been the Hydra agent all along, and how has he not gotten caught to this point, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So.
I'll give that much of a chance to the storytelling, but then no, erase it after a while.
Yeah, I can't imagine. They'll come up with something to nullify it, I'm sure.
As long as it's not Red Skull mind controlling him again, I'm fine.
Right. Yeah, nice.
So we had said earlier you're reading, Shiloh, you're reading the Alan Moore book. The name just went out of my head.
Providence.
Are you reading anything else? Or is that just it right now?
No, I'm trying to see if my whole
list. You're walking over to the big bookcase with the thousands of books in it now?
No, it's the cardboard boxes with all the like single issues.
Okay. I've got a few of those.
I've got probably far too many. But
no such thing.
I know I just picked up the new Tank Girl, but I haven't had a chance to read it.
Tank Girl.
Sorry. Everybody hates Tank Girl.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was reading, what is it, Monstrous? It's got a sort of vaguely manga style to it.
Did you see the collected graphic novel of Tank Girl that Titan Comics put out?
I didn't.
Oh. They put out a nice, I believe it's hardback. They did a new cover for it, and it's a collected edition of the books that they did. And, it's really nice looking. I didn't pick it up. I'm not a huge Tank Girl fan, but I have seen it. And how about you, Charles?
Currently reading, well, I've been recently obsessed with, the Valiant universe and their relaunch, happened a couple of years back. So, I have been reading 4001 AD. I've been reading Rai, R-A-I, by them. I've also been reading Eternal Warrior by them. Ivar Time Traveler is another one that I was reading. I just finished, a little late to the game, but Witches by Scott Snyder.
Oh, okay.
Which was good. You know, it I think it suffered from not knowing if it wanted to be a movie or a comic book
at points. Right, right.
I'm about to start reading October Fraction, or Faction, I should say, by Steve Niles, who I have a love-hate relationship with, so. and then Rebirth. Figured I'd give that a shot. And then, you know, from there, then the sky's the limit. I'll probably dive back into some Stephen King books. There's a couple of classics that I have been pushing off intentionally so that I can enjoy them for the first time. So. That's my book nook.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So now you've piqued my interest because I saw an article the other day and I kind of just ignored it because I thought it was some kind of what you call it, like retro piece, mm-hmm. which you see sometimes where it was like they were talking about Exo Man of War, but yeah. apparently they've relaunched that as well. So
yep.
I'm gonna have to go pick that up. Damn it.
Yeah, Exo Man of War, and then I'm sorry, I also read Bloodshot.
Okay,
which is also pretty good. Some interesting stuff going on there. And then they got this whole thing on what is her name? Is it I want to say Faith, which is they're saying the first heavy set female superhero, which is a lie. You know, there's been more in the past, but she's getting her own comic book now with them, which is, you know, interesting. For the first time, I'm seeing a universe created through Valiant where they are respecting the fans, and mm-hmm. it is all it's well thought out. They're not, you know, killing any canon in order to make a new storyline work. It's all coming together very nicely and intelligently. And I think the launch has been fun, you know, what's been going on with them. And yeah, I think I'll probably stick out with them until they decide to new 52 me. Otherwise, I'll stick it out.
They could always rebirth you.
Right.
Or Infinite Crisis you.
Oh, my God. So many.
poor DC. I mean,
Okay. Yeah. Go on.
Cool. So, as we're winding down here, because you know we're at an hour. Question we always like to wrap up the podcast with, especially with new guests, is and we'll start with Shiloh. How do you measure success?
Can I be the second one?
All right. So you measure success by going second. So, okay, Charles.
All right. So I measure success based on whether or not I'm moving forward. For instance, if a project has taken us to a next step, you know, somewhere in the career or whatnot, then I would say then we've had some success. Boy Zero has opened up the door now for us to pitch to some big companies. And also Caliber has expressed interest in Filthy Godless Heathens, and then another book that I've, you know, starting up. And so, yes, I feel like we've had success in that level. For me, the ultimate success is going to be when, I guess, companies are coming to me and asking, say, we want a storyline. We want this. We like your branding. We like, you know, Charles Chester as an author. Let's see what you can do with us over here. For me, that is going to be the ultimate success. Hopefully I'll be able to appreciate that, you know, when and if that comes, and not say, well, that's success, but you know, it's really if this happens later, you know what I mean?
Right.
As of right now, that is my ultimate success. But I do think there is merit in the small successes. You know, Shiloh and I have had a bevy of very good small successes so far.
Cool. All right. Are you ready now, Shiloh?
I guess finishing what you start. I don't know. I don't really have a very deep, profound answer for it.
That's okay. We're not deep, profound people.
No. And it's actually part of the point of the question, is that because everyone, almost everyone has a different answer and everyone has a different view on it. And people that are at the beginning of their career have one view, and people at the middle have a different view, and people, I won't say at the end, but, you know, people who've been doing it for a really long time have a completely different view on it. And, you know, it's, some people don't know what that is yet, you know, and that's perfectly okay. You know, like you said, finishing a project. I totally understand that. Yeah, and John, I can tell.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Absolutely.
And John, I have to beat up to get to finish projects. So it's.
Well, I measure success by the number of worlds I conquer. So, you know.
Okay, Zoom. Or anyway.
Or people I offend. Either way.
See, you guys didn't watch Flash, so you didn't get that reference.
Oh, no.
You used to measure by the number of people you killed, right, John?
Allegedly.
Oh, okay. That's right. You never admit to anything.
I didn't realize podcasts came with homework. I walked out of here with a little homework to do.
There you go.
Oh, no.
So I think that's a great note to end it on this week, boys and girls. So as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or, if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
Now let go of our cape.